radio@firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome to the Firehouse Magazine Insider for the November 2008 edition of Firehouse Magazine. My name is Peter Matthews, and today we are here with Dr. Richard Gassaway, fire chief in Roseville, Minnesota. Chief Gassaway has authored an article for the November issue of the magazine titled Developing and Maintaining Fire Ground Command Situation Awareness Part 1. You can find this article on page 78 of the November edition of Firehouse Magazine. Chief, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about the topic of situation awareness and how you developed the idea for this article?
Well, the article is based on some research that I did for my doctoral program. And the one thing that I learned up front when I enrolled in the program was that the process to become a doctor is a long and potentially grueling one. And I got some good advice from a mentor early on that when I write my papers for each class, it should be on a topic that relates to my end project, my dissertation. And that was good advice. And so I set out to try to figure out, well, what topic am I passionate about that I would be able to research for 4 years, and then have something to show at the end that I wouldn't give up on. And I had for a number of years studied near miss reports and line of duty death reports, and all the while read these reports or watch videos of fire incidents where firefighters were getting hurt and killed, and thinking to myself, why couldn't they see this coming? Why couldn't they see that these conditions were deteriorating so significantly that somebody was going to get hurt or killed if they didn't do something different? And yet they didn't do something different, and somebody was hurt or killed, or they had a very close near miss. And, this would frustrate me. Of course, it was Monday morning quarterbacking, because we always see the perfect vision after the event and after we know the outcome. So I was kind of skeptical of myself to say, don't judge in situations that you're not there to be a part of. But I still was struggling with how is this happening and what can be done about it. So I set out to try to understand what was it that was impacting fireground commanders' situation awareness that would keep them from being able to see these catastrophic events coming before they ever actually occurred and be able to change the course of action and be able to prevent a firefighter injury or death. So that was the foundation of the subject. And then each paper that I wrote for school just researched the topic just from a little different angle and gathered information from a different perspective. So when it come time to do my dissertation, which unto itself took a year and a half, I had a foundation of good research material to draw on to be able to formulate a plan for how to do original research. So that was kind of how it all came about.
And can you tell me about the research, how you went about it, how you found case studies to work with, and just delve into the whole research project?
Yep. Again, the topic related to situation awareness on the fire ground, and there's a lot written on the topic of situation awareness on the fire ground, but it's one thing to write about it, and then it's another thing to have empirical scientific research to back up what you're writing about or what you're making an opinion or a statement on. So some of the things that I read in magazines were more authors' opinions about issues related to situation awareness than something that was based on science. So frustrated that there was not a lot in the arena of the fire service to draw on, I started to look at other domains, other environments where decisions are made in situations that are similar to fire ground commanders, which is, you know, high stress, high risk, ever-changing, high potential consequence types environments. And what I found is there was a big body of research related to that topic in these other domains, namely commercial airline pilots, fighter pilots, tank commanders, submarine commanders, surgical teams, emergency room teams, all these environments which are high stress, high risk, high consequence, ever-changing, lots of unknowns. And there was a rather large body of research there that I was able to draw on of the challenges that they've had in situation awareness in those areas, and then make some inferences about how does that relate to the challenges that fire ground commanders are experiencing. And from that, I was able to identify a list of potential barriers that impact a fire ground commander's situation awareness. And when I set out to develop this list of potential barriers, I thought, well, I'll come up with 10, 15, 20 on the high end. Well, I ended up coming up with 93. And that even caught me unprepared and off guard to think, boy, there's, you know, 93 potential ways a fire ground commander's situation awareness can be impacted. That's pretty significant, and it might go a ways to help explain how these things are happening on the fire ground and commanders aren't able to see the changes coming. And I took the 93 barriers and listed each of them on an index card. So there were 93 individual index cards, each one with a barrier that would might say, have a statement something like, my situation awareness has been impacted by missed radio communications. And I developed a continuum where the research subjects would read the index card, and then they'd have to lay it down on a tabletop template that represented how challenged they were, from a minor challenge to a moderate challenge to a major challenge. So they would lay all these cards down, and that's called a multiple card sort, and it's a scientific technique. And after they laid them all down the first time, then I took the top 21 cards and had them resort the top 21 on the same continuum, and then got it down to their top three, and then I took the top three and had them sort those first, second, and third. Each commander did this separately and independently of each other, no conversations, not even in the same room, didn't even know who each other were, so they all did it independently. And when I got their top three, then I interviewed them and asked them questions about their experience with those barriers. You know, why did you rate this your top one? When have you been impacted? What did it do when you were impacted? How did you know you were being impacted? How did you overcome it? Or if you didn't overcome it, you know, why didn't you? What consequence did it have? And just a whole list of questions to really dig down and understand at the deepest level what they were experiencing. Then I asked them, share a story. Tell me a story about a time when you were impacted by this. So they were very forthcoming with a lot of detail about the particular fire incidents. And this is the interesting part of the book that I wrote that came out of this, is the book contains their lived experiences. And the commanders that I've talked to that have read the book say, man, I've been there. I've lived that. I've been impacted that way. And you know, it brings back so many memories for me of these challenges that I've had. And they were really forthcoming in sharing these really rich experiences that they had with the challenges of these particular barriers. So the process really involved three things. One, identifying and selecting expert-level fireground commanders. I couldn't do this with people who were novices. They had to have some significant experience, and I set some criteria and identified those. And then, two, having them do multiple card sorts of the barriers. And then, three, conducting retrospective interviews of their lived experiences with what those barriers were.
And through the 90-some points, what would be the top few items that you found throughout all the research? What are the top few items that will impact the entire fire service through what you've discovered?
Yeah, hey, Pete, let's hold that question, because one of the things that you had asked me that I haven't addressed yet is maybe the next question should be, well, before we delve too much into what the results of your research was, why don't you just for the viewers kind of just do an overview of how you define situation awareness on the fire ground? Because I remember I didn't go through those three, the three levels of situation awareness. So let's do that first.
Okay. Okay, Chief. The situation awareness, it's a common term on the fire ground in the last few months in several of the training classes. What exactly is situation awareness? How do we build our situation awareness skills on the fire ground?
Well, the simple definition of situation awareness is paying attention. And if it were that simple, then we wouldn't have all this interest in the topic, and we wouldn't have so many near-miss reports and so many line-of-duty death reports talking about situation awareness being the number one contributing factor, because we'd just tell everybody, hey, pay better attention, and it'll all be okay. So when we say the basic definition of paying attention, it's very easy for somebody to say, well, that was easy. I'll just pay better attention. But what comes out of this research is the fact that being able to pay attention isn't as easy as we might think it would be on the surface. And to help better understand this concept of situation awareness, I'd like to share with the listeners that it's a three-part or three levels of that make up situation awareness. And I borrow this from Dr. Mike Ensley, a researcher from a company called SA Technologies. And Dr. Ensley describes situation awareness level one as being able to take in all the clues and cues of the things that are happening around you. So just being a sponge and taking it all in. And she calls this the perception phase of situation awareness. So it's the foundation. If you're not taking in, tastes, smells, sounds, visual, just gathering it all in, it's hard to figure out what's going to, what's happening if you're not paying enough attention to even take it in. So it's that heightened awareness of the things that are happening around you, taking it in. That's the perception phase. The second level is what Ensley terms the comprehension phase, and that is making sense out of all those clues and cues that you captured. Okay, I've got all these clues and cues. Now, what do they mean? And it's real easy in the level one situation awareness to get overwhelmed, to get inundated, to get overrun by clues and cues and data and information. And in fact, that's one of the things that come out of the research is it's not that we don't have enough information on the fire ground. We have too much information, and we're commanders feel overloaded and overwhelmed because there's so much to process and they can't make sense of all of it. So the level two situation awareness of figuring out what's going on is not always as easy as it would perhaps seem, even for experienced fire ground commanders. Now, one of the things that we do when we develop expertise is we start to do something called chunking of information. In other words, you take a piece of the puzzle on your left and a piece of the puzzle on your right, and you say, this piece of the puzzle on the left all by itself doesn't mean much to me. and this piece on the right doesn't mean a whole lot to me. But when I bring them together and they overlay and the pieces fit together, then they start to form a picture. So those, the chunking of information is putting these pieces of puzzle together so you could start to say, oh, before this piece was just blue. Now I can see, because I've put it together with a few other pieces, it's sky. And these pieces were just kind of brown and gray, but now that I fit a few of them together, I'm starting to see that they form the image of a boat. So I got sky and boat, and I can start to perceive that this is maybe a water scene. You know, and that's what this chunking of information does when you're starting to comprehend that level two situation awareness, comprehending what's going on. And unless you have some expertise, it's hard to chunk these things together and have them mean things if you don't have any experience to draw from. And then level three situation awareness is, and I think one of the areas that is very challenging for fire ground commanders, and maybe the one that ties back to my very early frustrations in this, is being able to project the future events. So level three situation awareness is the projection phase, and that is being able to think out ahead of the current situation. Get out ahead of where the fire is now and think, where is the fire going? What's going to happen next? What's going to happen 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes from now? And saying, if we don't make a tangible difference in a very short period of time, something bad is going to happen. And being able to get out ahead of it and see that is going to happen in time to take a proactive course of action to prevent firefighters from getting hurt and killed. So situation awareness, three levels. Level one, perception, gathering clues and cues. Level two, comprehension, understanding what those clues and cues mean in the current moment. Level three, projection, being able to think out ahead of the pace and the speed that the incident is currently operating in to figure out what's going to happen next.
Okay, and now that we have an idea of what situation awareness is, what were some of the top items that you came across, that you discovered during your research, that involve situation awareness on the fire ground?
I had some pretty interesting findings come out of the research. Remember that the 93 were drawn from other industries, and then the fire ground commanders, when I interviewed them, I coded their responses, and I was actually able to come up with 23 more barriers that were identified by the fire ground commanders that had not been identified in any of the other research. So I had 23 unique barriers that were specific to the fire service, or at least hadn't been researched and discussed in other domains. When researchers set out to do their work, I think that all of them secretly hope that they're going to find that golden nugget, that one thing that is going to make their research stand out and be unique. You know, if you're a scientific researcher and you're in the lab trying to cure a disease, you hope that you're going to find the cure, or at least you hope you find a piece of the puzzle that is missing that helps you to contribute to a greater understanding that will, you know, eventually lead to the cure. And that's what I call the golden nugget, is that thing that hasn't previously been researched and studied and identified. And I think I found that golden nugget, or at least one golden nugget, in this research. And remember that the whole purpose of the study was to try to understand those barriers that keep fireground commanders from paying attention, you know, using, again, that simple term. So what are those barriers that keep them from paying attention, that draw them off task, draw them away from what they're supposed to be paying attention to in the big picture? And of the commanders that I interviewed, or did the card sort and interviewed, and I remember that they all did this independently, so there was no collaboration among them. Independently, the number one barrier to their situation awareness, clear and concisely, among all of the participants, was issues related to staffing. And I didn't know that it was going to go this way, but it did. And they were saying things like, when we arrive at the scene and we're understaffed, I ask my crews to do things that are riskier than I know they should do because we're action-oriented and we have to do something, or at least they feel as though they do. And then I engage them in a high-risk exercise when we're not staffed right, and then I tunnel my vision and I focus my attention on the safety of that crew and what they're doing, and in the process miss the big picture. I'm no longer big picture focused. I'm paying attention to just what they're doing, and my concern is narrowed to them, which can be a good thing, but when you're missing the big picture, it's not such a good thing. Or the commander said, When we're understaffed, I engage in the firefight. I jump on the line. I pull the hose. I set the ladder. And understaffing was forcing the commanders to not to be in a position where really they're not commanding. They're actually being a tactical person and not taking a big picture and stepping back and being the big picture commander, because they feel compelled to have to be hands-on and actually fighting the fire. And the reason this is not news to a lot of the listeners, but the reason this is a golden nugget in this research is that in none of the other domains that I studied was the issue of understaffing ever mentioned in the context of being a barrier to situation awareness. In other words, you know, no pilot that was studied said, well, I lost my situation awareness because when the plane got in trouble, I didn't have a co-pilot. Well, as you know, if you're getting ready to take a commercial flight and the co-pilot for some reason doesn't show up, they got an accident or something delayed them, they just don't fly the plane without a co-pilot. The plane doesn't fly. And if they don't have a flight crew or, you know, stewardesses and stewards, the plane doesn't fly. Surgical teams, you know, surgical teams don't run short. If they don't have the right team assembled to do the surgery, they delay the surgery until they get the right team. And we don't do this in the fire service. We send people in that are understaffed and undertrained and underexperienced and underprepared, and we assemble them a lot of times on a short notice, and we don't know who's coming or how soon they're going to get there, and we throw it all together and engage in the firefight, and this is drawing the fire ground commanders off task. And that was the number one ranked barrier to situation awareness, hands down. There were some others that were challenging to the fire ground commanders. Distractions and interruptions were a big one. That commanders said that when they were working at the incident scene, that people coming up to them and interrupting them and saying, "I got something I got to tell you," and drawing them off task of paying attention to the big picture and what their crews are doing. And they so often said that what the person had to tell them really wasn't that important at that given moment, but they gave them their time and attention and it drew them off task. Or they were interrupted by loud noises or sirens or fans or somebody screaming, and they were not able to stay focused on what they were doing. And kind of related to this, and another one that was pretty significant in this study, related to the location of the fire ground commander. Where is the fire ground commander located, and what impact does that have on their ability to pay attention? And this was a very unique finding, because as I've gone out and talked to fire ground commanders, and I've talked to hundreds if not thousands of them in different settings and classes that I teach, and I engage people in these discussions, I found that there is a very clear delineation between two mindsets of fire ground commanders. There's those who command in the street. In other words, they're not in a vehicle, they're out in the street, or they're up in the yard, and they're in their turnout gear, and they got their radio, and they're, you know, that omnipresent, all-in-white, front yard commander. So I call this person commanding from the street, whether they're actually in the street or in the yard. The second is the commander who commands what I'll say in the seat. In other words, they're in the cab of the truck or they're sitting in a command vehicle. And these two people or two mindsets are very different. The street commander says, I got to be out there where I can see, touch, feel, smell, know what's going on, go up and touch the siding on the house so I know whether it's aluminum or wood siding, or, you know, I got to be able to smell the smoke to know what's burning. And, you know, they all these reasons that they have to be out where the action is, and for whatever reason they say. And then the seat commanders, the people who command from inside a vehicle, say, I got to be in a vehicle where I have a quiet environment where I can use my worksheets and my clipboards and have a headset on so I never miss the radio traffic from my companies. And for all the reasons that they say that they're a seat commander. And so I ask a street commander, I said, well, could you ever imagine a time when you would command in a vehicle? And what they say is, I am not comfortable in a vehicle, but if the incident gets bad enough and complex enough and big enough, then I'll go to a vehicle. And I asked the vehicle commanders, the seat commanders, can you ever imagine a time when you would get out of the vehicle and command from out in the street? And, you know, and again, they're very passionate. No, this is, you know, this is where I need to be. To be able to be the most effective. And in fact, you know, share a little funny thing that one of the commanders said, because I asked a vehicle commander, could you ever imagine yourself getting out of the seat, out of the vehicle, and commanding from out in the street or up in the yard? And he said, yes, if my car caught on fire, I would get out of it, and I would command from the street or the front yard. So they're, you know, very committed and passionate about where they think command should be located. And one of the unique things that came out of this research was, no matter whether you started in the seat or started in the street, every commander said that as the incident became complex, and as they felt more and more overwhelmed, and as they felt as though they were starting to lose their situation awareness, they forced themselves to step back from the incident and get into a quiet environment, whether it was across the street, in a vehicle, in a cab of a truck, somewhere. So even the street commander said, when it started hitting the fan and I was getting overwhelmed, I stepped back. And the challenge, the problem with that is you don't always see that coming in time. You don't know when it's time to step back. Until the catastrophic event has occurred, you don't know. And you don't always see it coming, and you don't always feel yourself getting overwhelmed, and you don't always sense that you're losing your situation awareness until the catastrophic event occurs. And then, after the fact, you realize, I was too up close and personal, too invested in the hands-on actual firefighting and too up close to the action and the noise to be able to be a big picture, pay attention to the big scene fire ground commander. So one of the lessons that come out of this was, whether you're a street commander or a seat commander, be back far enough that you can see what's going on and pay attention to the big picture of the incident right from the get-go. Don't be up so close where you feel compelled to engage and where you're going to not be able to focus on everything that's happening on the fire incident. Lots more findings of the study. Some of them are in the article. The second part of the article contains the 10 best practice recommendations for fire ground commanders that come out of the study and out of my collective 30 years experience in the fire service and of the experiences of those who I've talked to. And there's some really good best practice recommendations there for commanders as well.
Okay. Again, this was Dr. Richard Gassaway, and Fire Chief Richard Gassaway from the Roseville, Minnesota Fire Department. The article is titled Developing and Maintaining Fire Ground Command Situation Awareness, Part 1. You can find that on page 78 of the November issue of Firehouse Magazine. And we'll go ahead and put a link to richgassaway.com, Rich's website, which has some more information. Chief, thank you for joining us, and we'll also put a link to the Leaders Toolbox podcast, which Chief Gassaway hosts every month on firehouse.com as well.
Okay, thank you.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.